Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and our panel discussion for this Tuesday morning. It's the 5th of January. Welcome. And again, Happy New Year to you. It's a delight to have you with us. We have a lot to talk about, a lot making news, and certainly very important stories to talk about. And we will do so with a wonderful panel. Let me introduce them to you. A reminder, you can get your thoughts out there, off your chest, out into the world, perhaps, if you write to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Shartok is with us. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm here.
Excellent. There lies half the battle, correct?
That's it.
Well, good morning to you, sir. Former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is here. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. I'm present. Ready to go.
You're always ready to go. That's great. That's why we love you, Mike. Good morning to you. Rosemary Armeo joins us, investigative journalist, UAlbany adjunct professor. Good morning, Rosemary. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. Good morning and happy to be here.
And we also welcome Jennifer Burns with us. And Jennifer, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, everybody?
Well, we're fine. You sounded just a little tentative. I don't know whether that was just me or.
No, I am. I stayed up and watched Trump's support of Loeffler and Perdue last night, and it led to a very bad night of sleep.
Yeah,
so
no,
I can't really say I'm perfectly good, but I'm here and good.
Yeah, you shouldn't do that. But you have to do it. I should mention, of course, that Jennifer is UAlbany lecturer in Africana Studies, and we thank you very much for being with us as always. Okay, so a lot making news. We'll start with Georgia. The vote, of course, is today. It will decide Senate control. And a lot of other things. It is really a very important race. The questions are there. Will Congress reduce medical costs for middle class and poor families and raise taxes on the rich? Will Joe Biden be able to appoint the judges of his choice to the federal bench? Will Biden be able to enact the coronavirus policies that he favors? And the biggie, will the United States spend tens of billions of dollars over the next few years to slow climate change? Really, those are the things on the ballot today, because that is the difference between having the control of both houses and not. So a lot riding on that vote, and it is going on as we speak in the state of Georgia. So both candidates, both the vice president and president-elect, Joe Biden, and the president, Donald Trump, were in Georgia yesterday campaigning. The vice president and president-elect was very enthusiastic and threw his full support behind the two candidates, John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock, while Donald Trump spent most of his 90-minute rally talking about how he was screwed in the election. Alan, go ahead.
It's complicated, that's for sure. You know, Joe, I'm not sure that the people of Georgia, who may need it the most, are interested in progressive change. And if that the things that you mentioned just now become the issue, they may vote for the other two and say, OK, we voted Trump out. That's what we needed to do. But basically, we're Republicans and we're sticking with the Republicans. That's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is that Trump has now made such a fool of himself, and they, Loeffler and the others, are sticking with Trump, and that could mean that they want to vote against Trump again. So the short answer is, I don't know. We should go to somebody who really does know, and that is Rosemary.
Oh, there you go, Rosemary.
Oh,
you know.
I think it's crazy to try to call this. Even Stacey Abrams is not venturing a dare on this one, because not only is it close to begin with, but there's so many variables. We know that there's lots of early voting by Democrats, by seeming Democrats, because they're young, they're minorities, they're people that she and her amazing organization have worked hard to get involved. They're people who did not vote in the general election for president, and now they are voting in this one. That's great. But today is a toss-up. We know that Republicans vote more on the actual day, which is today. So it's really hard to call what's going on. Now, the president, of course, has had no interest in this race. That would seem to be a handicap, except that he has always been successful. We saw that in the November elections, with conflating his own fate with that of other Republicans. Other Republicans did fine. He was rejected. So how that plays out in Georgia, I don't know. I continue to say the two Republican incumbents are among the worst, awful candidates. They do not care, or at least have shown no interest in their constituents. They have not paid attention to governance. They have acted in self-interest and greed. They deserve to be defeated, and yet Ossoff is untested, and Warnock has been painted as a radical, which is scary, because that's what happened to Joe Biden. He was also painted that way, and 70 million people in America fell for it. So why should Georgia be different? I think there's a lot at stake, and there is just no way to call this one.
Your points are well taken. However, it is important, as we know from the phone call on Saturday, that Joe Biden did win. Did win the state of Georgia, so that'll be an interesting call. Jennifer, you waded into the waters last night in watching the president's hour and 40-minute rant. Give us a sense of your thoughts after that experience and with what we've been talking about so far.
Well, Trump was really campaigning for himself. That was very clear. Loeffler and Perdue were names he threw out as tag-ons, really. He was there defending himself, laying what I thought was the groundwork for what he's doing next, which is either it includes motivating his base to follow him wherever he goes, which may be at attacking the Republican Party and looking to really splinter it off for a future campaign or something for himself. And it was very clear he had all his dog whistles going.
Yep.
And I will say, I found it very telling that he is shook by Stacey Abrams. Not just now, but I think in the future, because he referred to her quite often. And we have to remember, of course, that he was really kind of anti-Stacey Abrams earlier or before, when she ran against Kemp and Kemp won. And that involved voter suppression. And it also, for Trump, I think he believed it secured the state for him with Kemp. And now that's falling apart.
What do you think the role of the African-American vote is here?
Well, it's obviously very high. I mean, it's critical for the African-American vote to get out. And this brings pause to me about what the future will look like when it comes to gerrymandering, because that's going to unfold after this election. That's very clear. I mean, people are going to look to break up different areas, especially the ones that were heavy Biden voters. And after this election, they're going to look to do it quickly before the 2022 midterms, where whoever wins, Loeffler or Warnock, will have to run again. So race is a critical part of this. And I think one of the things that's missing here in the conversation is looking at Latino voters and what their role is going to be, because in Florida and in other places, there were large numbers of Latino voters that went for Trump. And so as much as we're paying a lot of attention to the black vote in Georgia, I think we need to look a little bit more at the Latino vote, too, and how Trump stirred the pot in a way against Latino voters. But we've seen how many of his ads and focus on them in other places did get Latino voters to turn out for Trump in key states.
Like Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mike Spain, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with it, what everybody is saying. It looks like two big national issues. One, the litany of opportunities that Biden will have to promulgate his plans, you know, for global warming, a new COVID relief package, infrastructure, judges, you know, all of that, versus Trump's own position. It's all about him on whether he was cheated out of an election that he should have won and actually did win. And to me, the big question is, you know, does that matter to Georgians? What is going to get their attention? I mean, both sides are making this a national election, and it's the state of Georgia who's going to represent them in the Congress. And Rosemary, you're exactly right. I mean, Loeffler and Perdue are terrible U.S. senators. Interestingly, too, he's a former U.S. senator. His term expired. And because of that, he can't even vote when they vote tomorrow on whether to certify the election. But the
right.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of an interesting dilemma. But the real question to me is whether that release of the tape or the transcript on Saturday, you know, from Saturday's phone call to the Georgia election officials by Trump, whether that is going to kind of discourage people, break their enthusiasm, have them not come out. It's a beautiful day. It's in the high 40s and sunny. I just checked the weather in Atlanta. And that usually brings people out. And as you all were saying, the early voting was statistically, and all the records show, are younger people, people who are diverse, and they tend to vote more Democratic. So if the weather's good, this rally last night might have shown people how unhinged Trump is, and kind of just have them in a dilemma, and they just might not go. I don't know. Well, it depends who.
Well, you spit in the hits last night.
Are you kidding me? We've had 4 years of this. It didn't show anything. It was just more of the same. People's idea on this, I believe, have been cemented for a while. And it's like the phone call to, you know, to me, I suspect to us, meaning the panel. It was outrageous. I mean, I think he should be impeached again. But to his followers, it was, oh, that's not what he really said. This is what he meant. And they didn't even listen to the whole hour, as I did and I presume you did. They listened to commentators talk about it, which makes it sound much smoother and cooler than it really was.
Yeah, nothing cooler.
All you had
that,
to do,
Mike,
is read the transcript. I mean, he literally was unhinged. I mean, it's frightening.
It's an hour-long transcript.
It's unbelievable. It goes on
and on.
All of him.
Go ahead, Rosemary.
No one is undetermined. And I think no one is undetermined enough about this race to have spent that much time, except for the real political junkies who are not going to count in this voting.
But Georgia did not elect Trump. They chose Biden over Trump. So there are so many factors here.
Well, in pockets.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
Right, in counties, in pockets that mattered, they voted for Biden. But in other places, that's not the case. Mm-hmm. And I think what Trump is saying, I mean, you look at this rally that he had last night, and there's very few masks. It is another super spreader event. People are unconcerned. They're uninterested in the COVID stuff. They believe still it's a hoax. These are people who are absolutely thinking what he did was fine, because that's what you do when people screw you. That's how he laid it, and that's what they believe.
I keep thinking
totally with you. That's so right.
I keep thinking about Raffensperger. What a hero, right? Am I wrong?
No, he and Sterling.
No.
He and Sterling, yes.
Oh.
We got one no and one yes.
Hold on. So
we cannot make heroes of them. We cannot make heroes of them. These are men who they're getting karma now. And it's a fluke that they are on our side in this. But they are people who set up a repressive, horrible system, the same one Stacey Abrams is working against. And they're defending their terrible, racist, undemocratic methods. And the fact that they're under attack by Trump is ironic and funny, but they are no way are they heroes.
There are those of us who look at this and say, you know what, would we do the same thing? I would, I think, and have. But you know, Rosemary, you're right. You're certainly right about the fact that it's a repressive, stupid bad system. Nevertheless, I got to give all kinds of kudos to this guy for having the cool. He lost a child for having the cool to look the president in the eye and say, no, you're wrong.
So many people have not stood up to the president.
Yeah.
These two men did. Mike, you were going to say, I cut you off. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I mean, there's all kinds of people who I completely disagree with, but they are recognizing the rule of law. They are honoring the Constitution, and they are doing the right thing. And you have to at least appreciate that. I mean, Tom Cotton, the senator, who I completely disagree with everything he's ever said and done, is actually speaking quite wise about this. And he's not joining the others like the Ted Cruz bunch tomorrow in that vote to decertify. I mean, you got to respect people, even if you don't agree with them when they do the right thing.
No, I do not respect them. They're doing this. I do not respect this because it goes back to intent. They are doing this because Trump is weak now in their perceptions and they can go after him. And the same, Kemp stole the election by repressing voters in Georgia. He stole the election
from
Abrams. He is not a champion of democracy. He just happens to be on a different side of this than Trump. And we're all calling him all full of respect and heroes because they're agreeing with us.
He's doing the right thing.
I understand the point, of course, and I have a harder time defending Kemp. But however, when it comes to the point to me would be, you're right. I was just struck by what you said a moment ago about how, you know, they're now saying this because Trump is weak. But my God, you have an entire, you know, you have half the Senate Republicans going along with this charade on Wednesday. And so I, while I fundamentally agree with you, I do think you have to call out and at least say thank you for what they did on Saturday.
And you did the right. You're saying the right thing.
Don't get me wrong. I'm happy they're doing it, but I don't think they're heroes. And I think that first of all, it isn't half the Senate Republicans; it's 13, and it's doomed to failure. And I think that Kemp and Raffensperger, who was the engineer of Kemp's ideas on how to repress voters in Georgia, he's the one who carried out the orders. Also, not a hero, but he stood up to a bully. Yes, I'm glad about that. It
could have easily
gone the other way.
No. All right, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We have letters. We welcome your thoughts on this. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Jennifer Burns. We will be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Jennifer Burns. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. We do have letters. Let's go to a few of those and get us started, and then we'll move on to other stuff. We go to Audrey, who says, on Stephen Colbert's show last night, Stacey Abrams was clear about how a clock is right twice a day, and we should not be giving Brad credit for choosing to do the legal thing. She also notes that at the same time as he is standing up to the bullying of Trump, he is attempting to continue to repress voters. I completely agree with Rosemary on this point.
You know what? My bet is that it's the end of any political career this guy has. And I think that's something to be considered. Rosemary?
You mean Raffensperger?
Yes.
He didn't. Does he really have a political career? He's kind of a bureaucrat, and there's always
He's the Secretary of State, obviously.
Secretary of State, yeah. You don't go from Secretary of State of Georgia to anything else anyway.
People do. People go from, you know, those positions to higher positions, no question about it. And, you know, I think you got to give him a little credit for that, but I do understand everything else you're saying.
Jerry said,
go
ahead, Mike.
I just add to that he is, I think he is kissing his political career and his professional career goodbye, and that he is at least doing that at this point has to be recognized. I don't disagree that he was part of the conspiracy to keep minorities from voting over the years, and he should be held accountable, but Now he is doing the right thing, and it's going to cost him his career, and I think that's courageous and deserves some acknowledgement.
Michael says, I agree.
Not sure how it's going to cost his career. Not sure how it's going to cost his career.
Well, we'll
He's
see.
Following
we'll
the
see,
rules.
Won't
that's
we?
What that's yeah. what they're supposed to do. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, it will. Yes, it will.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, won't. No, won't.
Jerry says, beware of blue dogs. Even if the Democrats are victorious in Georgia, there is no guarantee that a Democratic agenda will prevail, as the Republican minority could still depend on right-wing Democrats to sabotage it.
Well, would you rather have two more United States senators, for example, who are making a Democratic coalition and putting the Democrats in charge of the United States Senate than not? I mean, you can talk about blue dog, and I'm sure you're right. On the other hand, think about what the implications are here.
Let's see. Michael says, I agree with Rosemary. The governor and secretary of state both voted for Trump. They take their position now because they have no power to do anything else. Martha says,
Wait. Are you telling me that if the vice president, who is the present vice president, stands up there and does something totally despicable, which he doesn't have the right to do, that it's not possible that he will do that? I have a feeling it is, because he knows if he has any future in politics, it depends on his kissing, Trump's behind.
Okay.
I just don't know what he can do. I mean, I think if they came up with a plan, and that's why we're all worried, yes, they would be totally willing to risk it. But they're a bunch of bumblers. They've had 60 court cases and haven't won them. So what are they going to come up with now? I think they're out of shooting power. I think this is all bluff and bluster.
Yeah. Would you, hey, Joe, would you make sure we record that one little thing that Rosemary just said?
Well, we record all of it.
Yeah, I was being sarcastic. Yeah.
Let's see. Martha says, speaking of heroes, I read yesterday that Jim Jordan and Devin Nunes were to be decorated with the Medal of Freedom. So much for the high esteem associated with that.
I want to join Rosemary in her comment.
Well, they joined Rush Limbaugh.
Rolling in his grave.
I'm sorry, who is?
Yeah.
Who's rolling in his
Martin
grave?
Luther King.
Oh, Martin Luther
rolling
King. Yeah.
In his
oh,
grave.
Yeah. That's
when the medal used to mean something. I'm hoping for a mass uprising, sort of like the department, the former defense secretaries, and all the winners who are still alive turn back their medals. That's what I would like to see.
Great idea.
Let's.
Billie Jean King, this is your chance.
Paul McCartney?
Yeah.
Ariel says, just before tuning into the roundtable this morning, I heard a detailed interview with the leader of the Black Votes Matter in Georgia, who told the story of 198,000 voters who were purged from Georgia's voter rolls in October of 2019 for false and undocumented reasons, and how many organizations and Stacey Abrams have been fighting to get those voters reinstated ever since. The courts down there having been foot-dragging and refusing so far to act authoritatively. Thank you, Rosemary, for being firm about who Raffensperger is. He engineered this disenfranchisement of nearly 200,000 Georgia voters. Let's see. Jennifer, do you want anything on that?
You know, I've just been sitting here thinking, what would we be talking about if Raffensperger and Kemp were kind of complying with what Trump's asking? Or if reports were coming out that they were bending to him, how would we be talking about this? And I really do think that both of them and Gabrielle Sterling do need some real attention. And I don't want to say, major praise and heroship, but there is a point, Alan talks a lot about there's no bottom. Well, for some people, they have found the bottom. And I think it's really important to recognize that, because it really does help us have some kind of trust in our electoral process in the state of Georgia. I'm not saying, that they're going to be these great leaders in the future. And frankly, for Kemp and Raffensperger, I think their careers are over. I mean, that's it. And Sterling, especially after his impassioned call to the president to stop inciting violence, right? I think there's something to be said about this, because they're going up against the Trump machine. This is a machine that Trump is operating here. And so I think it's important to recognize that. And, of course, it's going to keep the spotlight on Georgia to be paying attention to what's going on in that state when it comes to voting rules and regulations and procedures in the future.
You know, one of the things.
Okay, so I think we're thinking of, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Rosemary.
I think we're thinking about this all wrong. I think that there should be, if I were Biden, I would set up an electoral a commission to investigate elections.
I agree.
Because I don't think they're free and fair either. And Trump did this. Don't forget he did this when he said there was voter fraud in 2016. And what did that commission do? Found nothing, because there's nothing to find. So what Trump has done really effectively is use the power of calling for an investigation. Don't forget, in Ukraine, he didn't really want an investigation of Biden. He wanted an announcement of an investigation so he could use it, bluff and bluster. And if there were a real investigation, you could look into things like voter suppression, thwarting of the people's will, as in Florida, when felons were given the right to vote by voters, and then that was taken away by the legislature. All of those real things would be investigated, along with the phantom fraud that Trump keeps touting. We have nothing, Democrats and liberals have nothing to fear from an investigation of the electoral system, and a lot to gain.
We have a couple more letters here I want to get to before the break. I do want to just touch on one thing, though. I was struck by a statement made yesterday on I believe it was Jake Tapper's program yesterday afternoon, in which they were talking about how different all of what we were discussing would be if there was a Republican House. Well, then what
absolutely
would happen?
Right. That's absolutely true, and it could happen. We know that the history of this country is that quite often when a president is elected, the people cover their bets by electing a house of the other party. And that is something that I think I've been talking to congressmen about, that Democratic congressman, who seemed to be very much aware that that could happen.
We go to Fred, who writes, are Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue still senators, or did their terms end January 3rd? Well, Perdue's did.
Loeffler is still, because she's serving the unexpired term of the guy that stepped down for health reasons. And until she loses the election,
All right. So that question answered. We go to Bob, panel. Are there legal steps to start a petition for Stefanik's censure? Is that useful? At least Stefanik has tried to negate or hold up my vote for Biden. I'm trembling with frustration. What kind of country did I serve for? Well, my guess is...
Feel your pain.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, are we talking about what's going to go on tomorrow? Are we still talking about Georgia today?
I think we're talking about both.
Yeah. Well, you know, just to clarify, New York's Congresswoman Elise Stefanik said that she is going to support the efforts to question the ballots and not certify certain states when it comes up tomorrow in Congress. And the reason she gives is that she wants to protect the Constitution and democracy, which is beyond specious. It may look like it's a noble thing to do, but it's completely fraud. She's doing it because her constituents are Trump people, and she is joined at the hip to Trump, and it's just her bearing her full colors.
Wait. Sarcasm alert. She said she came to this very, it was a very difficult decision for her. That's what she said. Sarcasm alert.
And let me underscore too that except for maybe ONA News or Newsmax, she hasn't even spoken to Fox News about it. She won't be interviewed by local news media about it, who want to ask her about it. She just puts out these videos that let her look like she's reasonable, explaining that there's still all these questions. There are not questions. The questions have been answered. These are frivolous lawsuits. The allegations have been proven baseless, and you continue to repeat them. I mean, it's what she's doing is so much an assault on our Constitution and our democracy. But I do give her credit for one thing. She didn't take the vaccine. Out of step.
With and a lot of other Congress members. By the way, right.
With the things you're saying, Mike, she also is the single congresswoman in our area who will not come on the congressional corner.
Exactly. That's because you'd ask her questions and she'd be confronted with having to answer them.
I've told the story before, but I was speaking to there was a woman that I interviewed who wrote a book about, was writing a book about women in Congress, and she was talking about how she wanted to get Elise Stefanik for this book, and she was told by Elise Stefanik's office that she only did local media, she did no national media, and I said, I can tell you right now that's not true either.
She doesn't do any media. Yeah, right.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we have a lot of letters. We'll get to those, and we'll move on the discussion, and we would love to hear from you. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Jennifer Burns. 11 minutes before the hour of 10 o'clock, we have some letters here, quite a few actually, so let me get to those. And we will move on from there. Peg says, though it may be extremely childish, where are the people yelling, lock him up? This is part of his agenda.
Well, let me just say that on many, many occasions I have indicated, and I think most people will know this, that one of the reasons that he is so loath to lose and to get out is because, and now today we hear he may be going to Scotland, there's some evidence of that, is because he doesn't want to get locked up.
Yeah.
You know, the guy from WikiLeaks, they want to extradite him to the U.S. Maybe Trump is hoping for the same favorable judge if he goes over to the UK.
Maybe a switch, yeah.
That was a fascinating decision based on mental health.
Trump might qualify, Alan. I mean,
well, maybe less sympathetic.
Let's see. We go to Harris, who writes, the Cruz Hawley crew is certainly motivated by self-serving reasons and will add to their presidential campaign coffers. In addition, they had to figure out a way to get Pence out of a jam. Pence must follow the constitutional tenets, but he can now voice his personal opposition in doing so. Win, win, win for these future GOP candidates. How many backroom phone calls do you think it took to figure out that scam? Didn't the sycophant Ron Johnson hold a Senate hearing about voter fraud 2 weeks ago? All was debunked. Can we taxpayers ask for our money back? No, you can't. Jane says,
no, remember Benghazi, 9 hearings to prove nothing. So,
right.
No, investigations are out of control. The whole idea that, oh, if there's an investigation, that means bad things. No, it doesn't. And like I said, I think we have to rethink this.
I'm old enough to remember Joe McCarthy in his prime.
Mm-hmm.
Mark writes
dot,
that
dot, dot.
Thomas Friedman said yesterday that the media and the public should forever shame the treasonous congressmen and women who vote to overturn the election by addressing them as coup plotters henceforward. He also said it was his hope principled Republicans leave the party on Thursday and start a new one. He said if even 5 senators did this, they would become kingmakers and it would be the end of the Republican Party. Jane says, Jane makes a point that Rosemary made, but that Brian Kemp was previously Secretary of State and presided over his own election. Yes. Paul says, yep. Alan is right. Yep. Rosemary is very wrong. Don't forget the current governor of Georgia was the prior Secretary of State, and look at the trouble that he has wrought. Nick says, who released the tape? Well, it was the Secretary of State's office. They said apparently so. Yeah, they had the copy of the tape, and they said, or they had the tape. They taped it, and then they said, "Well, we're not going to release this unless the president misrepresents the call." Well, that took about 12 minutes on Twitter until he did, and then they released it a short time later.
And may I point out that it is legal, it is fine to tape calls, one-party consent in Georgia.
But not in Massachusetts. And I've always thought that the reason you need two sides in Massachusetts is that the legislature was fully aware of what their risk was in letting anybody tape.
Mm.
You know, the interesting question is here for me is how many other calls did he make that haven't been released yet or recorded?
Right.
Right.
Well,
yes.
You know, and the flip, the interesting flip with Loeffler, not that I really think it's a flip, but publicly flipping on Sunday, she was all about how she was only focusing on Tuesday's election. She wasn't getting into what would go on Wednesday with the Electoral College. And then yesterday she came out with, you know, I'm going to contest it, too, on Wednesday. So I would bet she received a couple of calls, probably, you know, threatening that he wouldn't show or what he would say when he did show. That wouldn't be as helpful to her.
Yeah, it does reveal that everything that Trump does is transactional. Everything is. And you know, he was saying it during the phone call to Ratzenberger. You're Republicans. Come on. You can do this for me, you know. It's everything is a chit that he wants to cash in later on. If he's going to do this for you, he expects complete, utter loyalty until the end. And that is that's what's wrong. I mean, you know, that's not democracy.
Look, fellas, I just need 11,000 votes. Come on. Can't you help me out? Come on.
You can find them.
You can find those.
Just say you recalculated. It's okay.
Yeah, it's all right. It's fine. Who? Oh my God. How many showers really did you have to take? Yes, go ahead, Jennifer.
Well, and it's also really interesting because you know all of us, a lot of us across America, do our trainings for harassment and all kinds of things like that at our companies and at our jobs, and we're constantly reminded how terrible and illegal and bad quid pro quo is, and retaliation. And that's exactly what Trump is doing to pretty much everybody in the Republican Party who doesn't go along with him.
Mm. Great point.
And we just watch it and say, oh, there's nothing we can do about it. But yet, for all us ordinary people, we'd be in big trouble for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, the surrender caucus, I think, is the term that he's using for the Republicans who are not supporting him tomorrow.
Right. Let's see. I want to go to some other. We do have this letter from Charles, who writes that Senators Josh Hawley is a 2006 graduate from Yale Law School. Ted Cruz, a 95 graduate of Harvard Law School. Can these law schools rescind their law degrees for their barefaced assault on democracy and grave abuse of power?
It does seem like legal malpractice, doesn't it?
let's see. And we have this one. We do welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. I would like to see someone protect behind the podium in Congress tomorrow a digital readout that records every COVID death as it occurs live while they debate this ministerial function of certifying the election, to juxtapose death with the energy on lies. Well, that is a very sober statement to make. Let's take one more, and then we will go to a break. Asking for a friend, when New York loses at least one congressional district, can the New York legislator determine to eliminate Ms. Stefanik's district? She is unworthy to hold her office.
It's an interesting question.
I know who to reach.
It's an interesting question, you know. That district, as you know, because he's our commentator, by Owens, former Democratic Congressman Owens. So she's been winning. There are a lot of Republicans up there and a lot of mooses. But I got to say that it is possible for a Democrat to win that district if they change some of the ways in which it's constituted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Put some cities into it. Some more cities down along the thruway into it.
Well, you got Saratoga, right? Saratoga's in there.
Yeah, you do have that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Saratoga in the news, too. We'll talk about that a little bit later. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters. Also, we have many other issues to discuss. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Jennifer Burns making up the program this morning. Panel at WAMC.org is where you can send your thoughts and concerns. We would love to hear them. We're going to take a break. We'll hear a lot of things, including news with Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Jennifer Burns making up the panel. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. So we have been talking about a lot of things this morning. We started off talking about the Georgia vote and what is going on. Of course, there is the story which we were touching on in many facets. And that is what will happen on Wednesday. I would like to just talk specifically. There's an article in the Washington Post this morning about Trump sabotaging the GOP on his way out of office. We did have that one letter of talking about the Tom Friedman piece of starting a new party. So with this push to overturn the election, where do you think in the deep split within the GOP, and Alan, we'll of course start with you as the political scientist, but what do you make of that? I was struck by learning that you have states where the senior senator is telling the junior senator, you know, you really shouldn't be doing this, and they're saying, no, I know what I'm doing.
Well, they do know what they're doing. What they're doing is being political prostitutes. That's what they're doing. I mean, they want to survive, and one and one makes two, and they don't give a damn about the United States Constitution or the freedom that we have for elections. You know, we have Trump, who said that he wanted to serve a third term before it became apparent he wasn't going to get a second term. We now know that the Republicans, who are on the defensive, majority of that party by far, will stick with Trump. You could name it the Trump Party. You could name it the Elephant Party. But I don't see where a separate party serves the Republicans at all. And I doubt very much that it'll happen, although with this guy, anything can happen. Because, Jennifer, as I was saying, I have said many times, there is no bottom. But I meant with Trump, there's no bottom.
Rosemary.
Well, I don't know that it's another party forming so much as it's another powerful movement within the Republicans, who keep changing. We saw this with the Tea Party. Was that not a separate party from what had been the traditional until that point Republicans? And this seems to be more of the same. The idea that we're going to vote our way no matter what, no compromise, no giving in to the other side. Is hard line. I don't know that it's another party. And really, when has another creation of a third party ever been successful in the United States? There does not seem to be any new blueprint for that today. I think this is just tension within the Republican Party, and it's stuff that political scientists and political writers love to write about. It's all just a lot of baloney. No more than I think that the centrist and the progressive wings of the Democrats are going to explode, and you're going to get two parties there. I think there's this tension that has existed within the major parties since they formed in modern times, and that it will continue.
Rosemary, while you're at it, you know, there's news this morning, and there was yesterday, that AOC might want to challenge Chuck Schumer for the, you know, for that Senate seat. Chuck Schumer, who may well, by the
right.
way, become the head guy in the entire United States Senate if the Democrats win those two seats. What do you make of that, Rosemary?
Well, as you know, I've been rooting for that. I think this is a generational change. It's not war within the Democratic Party. Schumer has been a very disappointing minority leader to me, and I think to many others. AOC is a charismatic, talented young comer, and she's not a a grenade. She's not blowing up things the way Palin loved to do. I think it was a mistake going after McGrath in Kentucky, but then she supported Pelosi twice now for Speaker. I think she's recognized and being groomed as the future of the Democratic Party. I'm all for it.
All right. Mike, anything you want to add?
Yeah, no, I was going to say most of the dissenters, the more than 100 Congress members who are planning to vote or not to vote for certification tomorrow, most of them are members of the House of Representatives. They have 2-year terms and they're coming up for reelection in now less than 2 years. So they're the ones who are more likely to go along with Trump. But the senators who have 6-year terms and the members of the Congress who are probably in their last terms and in the safest seats, those are the ones who seem to be more outspoken, not universally, but more outspoken. And it just demonstrates the fear they have. You know, the ones who are vulnerable to the electorate, that if Trump targets them, it will hurt them. But the only other quick thing I was going to say, just on an earlier note, Alan, is you recall a few years ago when Republicans had a very thin control of the state Senate in New York, there was a coalition of independent Democrats, a handful of Democrats that sided with the Republicans.
Right.
That might be more likely to get a handful of senators, kind of like the way the Tea Party did it, and to form like a coalition that would use and broker their power to help, you know, to push things on the Democrat side when they agreed and push things on the Republican side. And that's probably what will happen. And it's not bad if that kind of thing happens.
But not to do what these guys did, which was to organize with the opposing party. You know,
that was a little over the top. They actually helped keep the Republicans in power and to keep the Democrats from getting power. But a coalition.
And by the way, in the last election, they got theirs, got them.
They got them bad. Well, it had problems. Their leader, Jeff Klein, had allegations against them that have still not been resolved about the way he treated his staff and stuff. I mean, you know, it all fell apart. And the Democrats just cleaned house. Now they have full control of the state Senate and the Assembly and the governor's mansion and the attorney general and the controller.
And unlike the United States Congress, that ain't going to change. Not in the near future. Right.
I don't think so.
You know, it's interesting because I hearing what Mike just said is really something that Biden is kind of calling for, this bipartisan working together that could lead to a group of people who may be of different parties that kind of form a little bit of a block together as a coalition. But the other thing this reminds me of is thinking back on the kind of rise of the silent majority strategy and how, like, Dixiecrats separated, right, themselves from their party, which was the Democratic Party, and then moved and got sucked into the GOP or kind of birthed the GOP. And I'm wondering if things will go far enough where there'll be some of these maybe older Republicans or maybe new and young Republicans who could possibly, it's far-fetched, but get sucked into or you know, faction off into the Democratic Party through this bipartisan movement that Biden's talking about building. Be interesting.
Especially if you look, Jennifer, at the evolution of Georgia. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I agree with you. Yeah, Georgia's kind of like showing a similar trend to what I just said.
Well, and it's becoming more metropolitan, cosmopolitan, young. And that seems to be what has made the difference. Lyndon Johnson, as you remember, said, "I've lost the South," when he said, "We shall overcome," in that famous speech.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
now,
you know,
please, Mike.
Oh, no. I just to add on to what Jennifer was saying, if the election were to go for the two Democrats in Georgia tomorrow, I think that thin margin of just, you know, 51 votes when you count the vice president, Kamala Harris, is going to require that Joe Biden be very deferential to some Republican leaders and some moderates in the Republican Party. And you'll see him reach across. And that would be good. I mean, it would be a good thing for democracy if one party just didn't control it and you had to have that kind of brokering going on. And even if it splits, you know, let's say Warnock wins and Ossoff loses or the other way around, it's going to be so close that a couple of Republicans are going to be very, very powerful. Mitt Romney comes to mind.
So here's a little tidbit. Roll call. Mm-hmm. We know roll call. Mm-hmm. They tweeted 6 minutes ago, new Iowa Senator Charles Grassley, the Senate pro tem, President pro tem, says he and not Vice President Mike Pence will preside over the certification of Electoral College voters since, quote, we don't expect him to be there.
Wow. Now that's news.
Now, okay. And then they said Grassley.
What does that mean?
Well, I don't know. Grassley said he will listen to debate and that, quote, it would be really wrong for me to say I have my mind made up. So it appears that this is coming solely from Senator Grassley's office. And I don't know. So I have not heard about it beyond. I've done a couple searches and not found much else there.
Maybe Pence had a nervous breakdown.
You know,
maybe,
you forget
maybe
to
he
put
went to
those.
Scotland. I don't know.
You put those dental appointments down on your phone. You forget to put them on the calendar, and then you miss them. It's you know it happens. But my understanding, and I guess if this information is correct, which we don't know yet. This is according to the senator, so still have to figure that out. But if this information is correct, I was under the impression that it was the vice president's job. It was up to the vice president to do this. But I guess the senator is saying that if the vice president isn't there, it would fall to him.
Beats me.
Well, it's interesting because one of the things that came through with Trump last night talking at his rally was that Mike Pence was going to come through for him.
Well, he wanted him to come through. It was more of a, will you please come through?
Well, I wonder if this is part of what he's asked Mike Pence to do. If there's some other trickery happening here where he
Grassley
won't show this.
Yeah.
Yes. Like there's larger here planned.
Yeah.
I don't completely get
it. Oh, my God. He is the master of suspense. He is the master of suspense and drama, and he's doing it again. And, yes, I'm sitting here, too, saying, okay, what trick do they have up their sleeve? What's going on? It's crazy, and we're on the edge of our seat, and I hate being manipulated this way.
and please forgive me for what I'm about to say, but is Grassley in on it, or are they playing fooling with the old guy?
Yes.
Trump totally owns Grassley.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but the Pence bowing out, not being there. I mean that. Just from the surface of what the Hill is reporting, it sounds like Pence is trying to avoid
roll
being
call.
Put
I'm sorry. Yeah. Go
in
ahead.
That, oh, roll call. Being put in an awkward. Situation of having to either honor Trump's request and violate, you know, the Constitution, or go ahead and violate the Constitution. And this is plan number three, which lets him step out. But him stepping out doesn't protect him politically. It makes him look like a coward, I think.
No kidding.
And if he steps out, that means he's not voting, which means there's one less Republican vote for this.
And Perdue is not seated. Perdue is not seated either, you know. Perdue is missing from the roster because his term expired and he hasn't been reelected yet. Unless it's
Rosemary,
a clear
what do you
reelection.
Mean, Rosemary, what do you mean if he steps out? He doesn't get a vote. The vice president doesn't get a vote, period, as you know.
Well, he breaks a tie. I mean, I don't think we're anywhere near a tie, but he...
No,
he,
we're not.
You're losing another Republican presence and an important presence, by the way, in the chamber. Okay, you're just hearing me stutter because I don't understand the strategy going on here.
Okay. No, it's fascinating, and we're not the only ones. everyone on Twitter is trying to make sense of it, and it's hard to make sense of it because you don't know what's going on.
My question. Oh, I'm sorry, Jennifer.
No, go ahead, Jennifer.
My question is, could this create, and I don't have any idea of the answer to this, but could this provide or create some sort of legal ground that would help the Republicans who are challenging the certification process because the vice president wasn't there?
Or the other way around.
Right.
In other words, the Democrats could sue if there's mischief in saying he's not the vice president and the vice president's supposed to be doing this.
Mm.
Grassley isn't.
Right.
In other words,
Grassley. Yeah.
We don't know.
We don't know. That's so honest.
What is Mike Pence doing? It's very odd. The last, month? He's been pretty MIA on everything.
Yeah, he has not been around.
Yeah, talking about going out of the country, Jennifer, and then he changes that idea. Yeah, he's been really erratic, more so than usual.
What would you do, panel, if you were Mike Pence right now? I mean, you know, this is a guy who thought he was going to be president of the United States if it went well. It hasn't gone well. What would you do now?
Give the gavel to the old guy?
Yeah, give the gavel to the old guy. Well, maybe he's still going to be in Georgia campaigning on Wednesday, you know? Who knows?
Because the election will be going on, continuing. Well, it was interesting. This is to Jennifer's point, but it was interesting watching Pence talk yesterday because he really did... He did not wade into those waters. He simply said, you know, Wednesday will be an interesting day, and kind of left it at that, which is fascinating.
He's done. Cooked. Put a fork in him.
Pence. Yeah.
Yep.
I think so. If this happens, if he absconds, I think it is. I think he's politically dead. He's over. Done.
On the other hand,
he could wait until the election is certified, which it's going to be, and Trump is out, and he says, look, you know, it's a great run. I think that we were unfairly tossed out. I would have liked it to continue. Maybe it will in the future. And he takes over. He would separate from Trump, which he has to do.
How does he do that?
Trump is... But like I said, he waits until the action is taken without him and then says, yeah, it's really regrettable, but let's move on.
So Nicholas,
continue the legacy.
Nicholas,
how does he do that?
Nicholas Fandos, who is a congressional correspondent for the New York Times, spoke to a Grassley spokesman who said that the senator, quote, does not have any indication that Pence won't be present. He said Grassley was trying to explain that as president pro tem, he would fill the chair if Pence does not show.
Oh, well, that's different.
Oh.
However, they do have Grassley on tape saying that in a conversation with Mike Pence that Mike Pence will not be there and he will be presiding over the. Over the proceedings. So jury's still out, and we'll see what happens.
Weird.
Yeah.
A lot of drama. This is an extraordinary time in American history. We are in a very interesting moment.
Good Lord,
yes. Turn the TV on the minute we're done.
Yeah, well, they're not. Yeah. but in the meantime, stay tuned here to WAMC. All right, let's go on to other stuff. Is McConnell behind this block, this to block the Cruz crew? I don't know what that means.
I think they're perhaps suggesting that the Grassley thing is a way. He's loyal to McConnell. And that Grassley stepping in sort of speeds up the certification and it doesn't embarrass Pence, and although I think it will, and maybe there's some crazy scheme like that.
So we go to Mike, who said, "I'd like to know the panel's thoughts on what can/should be done to counteract all of the nut job conspiracy theories. How can the new administration limit news sources and politicians from continuously spewing false information without stepping on the First Amendment?
Well, we know what Joe Biden is doing, which is nothing, and it seems to be working. Yes, Rosemary?
That's true. That's true.
In other words,
he says, do nothing, that we have to move on. Also, Gail Shee from the
Gail Godwin,
editorial writer for the New York Times, also suggested yesterday that she Gail Collins, that's it. Thank you.
Okay.
She also suggested that maybe moving on was the best thing for the country. I am too Sicilian. I want revenge and accountability. So I have to. Yeah, I still don't see. Linda Ellerbe and I have talked all frequently about whether the pardoning of Richard Nixon was justified, that she says she hated Gerald Ford for doing it and then later came to see the wisdom of it. I still don't see the wisdom of it. So that's my, I have to qualify my expression.
Jim Clyburn was on all the morning shows this morning. I heard him on three of them at least. And he was saying that he feels that we should just, the question was about, specifically about impeaching the president again. And he said that he feels that we should just move on. It's time to move on.
The one thing about impeachment, I mean, it really would be a great expenditure, again, of political capital at a time when the economy and public health needs so much attention. However, if he were impeached, he could not run again. So there is some value to the exercise.
Yes. And that's a point that I believe was the New York Times in their editorial today saying that was what the reason would be to do it, is to keep him from ever running for office again.
Well, you'd still have to win in the Senate, and that wouldn't be easy.
No.
Well, depending on what happens in Georgia, though, it's possible.
Well, what about whether he's behind bars? Can he run for president if he's behind bars?
I've asked that question myself many times.
I'm sure you have.
Let's see.
Boy, that would be fun.
Melinda writes to us and just wants to make sure that most of the city of Saratoga is not in Elise's district. It's Paul Tonko's turf, so Elise is on the fringes outside the actual city. So please don't hold us accountable for her being in power.
Okay, that's a good letter.
Well, that was deliberate, though, to keep that Democratic base out of her district and give her that extra oomph. But if there is a reapportionment, putting Saratoga maybe in coming down into the Capital Region a little bit could really tip things for a Democrat. And that's the nasty way that, reapportionment works when you're in power or out of power, you know.
John writes, any chance that Trump is attempting to fracture the Republican Party and create his own Trumpian party? He likes to put his name on everything after all. Rosemary, you were talking about that a moment ago, but...
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that would require way more work and organizational skills than Trump either has or is willing to expound.
Alan?
No.
Nah. I've already talked about it. I don't think it's going to happen. I just don't think it'll happen. I think the Republicans' party is the Republican party. Every time we've seen an attempt at a third party or a split, it really hasn't worked out.
Jim writes, so Grassley takes the gavel and then Republicans bring in Supreme Court because Vice President did not preside over proceedings. Therefore, accreditation is invalid and Trump is still president. Just saying. Oh, the conspiracy theories go on, right? This is the fun. Anything the Republicans or Pence does is for the sake of not upsetting Trump's base. And after Trump leaves office, they will continue the denial of and justification of Trump's behavior. It's all about pandering to Trump's base. That from Mark. Brian asked the question of, is it a constitutional requirement that the vice president be present? I think that's how it's written, but it has been delegated before, is my understanding. Mike, is that your...
That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know specific cases when it was delegated, but this was a perfunctory move every four years. It was just a formality and period. And, you know, it would just happen and it wasn't getting any.
So who cares?
So who cares? Right. So if someone stepped in for the vacationing vice president or something like that, it wouldn't matter.
So this is a Bill Kristol tweet. from last night that a listener shares with us and says, okay, you want it outside the box. Here it is. One, Pence would prefer not to subvert the Constitution on January 6th. Two, but Pence feels a strong sense of loyalty to Trump. Three, and Pence wants to avoid a demand that he pardon Trump upon a Trump resignation January 19th. So Pence resigns as VP tomorrow.
Wow.
Ain't going to happen.
Right. Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Who would be, well, then Trump wouldn't, would
he
not,
would have a
because
vice
Nancy
president.
Pelosi would be next, so he would not.
I can't believe the panel is not on board in supporting the words of Bill Kristol, but go ahead.
But he does get to appoint a vice president, but it has to be confirmed. And there's not an awful lot of time to do that.
No, good point. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation, a very spirited one. We will continue in that vein when we return. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Mike Spain, Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Jennifer Burns making up the group. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Shartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Jennifer Burns, panel at WAMC.org, if you would like in on the conversation. So I want to get to some more letters, but before that, let's talk about some other things going on. Of course, the region making international news, national and international news yesterday as the new variant of the coronavirus has been detected in New York, Saratoga Springs to be exact. All of this comes in the Empire State as the pace, the sluggish pace, as the New York Times puts it, of vaccinations has been striking in New York City, the one-time epicenter of the pandemic. New York faced a growing crisis on Monday over the lagging pace of the vaccinations as deaths continue to rise in the second wave and Governor Cuomo came under mounting pressure to overhaul the process. The small number of vaccine recipients is particularly striking in New York City. Roughly 110,000 people in a city of more than 8 million have received the first of two doses necessary to help prevent serious cases of the disease. That's about a quarter of the total number received by the city. So not to say the obvious, but to say the obvious, so they have it. It's just not getting into the arms of the people who need it. The concern over vaccinations in New York echoes problems reported during a sluggish rollout across the nation and comes as a man in his 60s became the state's first confirmed case of a more contagious variant of the virus. The man is recovering, but Mr. Cuomo said early indications were that the case in Saratoga Springs was evidence of community spread. Cuomo said yesterday, I think it is much more widespread than people know. The confirmation of the variant in New York could complicate the planned inoculation of some 19.5 million residents, with criticism beginning to mount over the rollout. Mike, let me go to you first on this, as you already have people concerned about the rollout going slowly. Now you have concerns in New York State because the Capital District and the Capital Region has seen very, very high numbers. And now there's some question, as the governor seemed to indicate yesterday, that this could be the reason why.
Yeah, but I think what has happened only underscores the need to do exactly what Cuomo has been pressing for and what he pressed for yesterday in his news conference. And that is that we hunker down even more. We get very, very rigid about social distancing, masks, and where we go and how much, you know, stay outside, et cetera, et cetera. We really have to do that if this variant that's much more contagious is out there, and it apparently is. If it made it all the way to Saratoga Springs, it's probably a lot of other places too, just like in California, Colorado, and in the state of Florida. So it'll pop up elsewhere. But the other is that they got to fix this distribution problem, and the vaccinations have to start ramping up. And that, you know, it's very difficult, but you might recall the story a couple of weeks ago in the New York Times back in 1947 when there was an outbreak of smallpox in New York City, within 3 weeks, they were able to vaccinate 6 million people. So, you got to focus on it. And whether it means bringing in the National Guard, he's talking about bringing back retired healthcare workers to do it, because legitimately the current healthcare workers are busy taking care of the people with COVID. It has to be single-minded, it has to be non-political, and it has to be forceful that we start sticking people in the arm.
We're talking about this, of course, in New York because it's of this variant being detected. But as I mentioned from the New York Times article, this is something, the slowness of the vaccine being distributed is being seen across the country. And this is a federal decision to put this on the backs of the state and local governments who don't have the resources to do it. Alan, I don't know, yeah. You know, their hands are tied, really, as how much you can do. You have the vaccine, it's in your possession, but how do you get it out to the people if you don't have the resources to do that?
Well, the first thing that's happened is there's this huge fight that has now broken out between the governor and the mayor of New York City.
Right.
On this. The governor is threatening to fine hospitals that don't do it, vast amounts of money. And to single them out, the mayor is saying that's disgraceful. You can't do that. You have to leave it to the various hospitals. And yet some, like Columbia Presbyterian, are doing it very well. And others are doing it like the city system, the city health system is doing it very poorly. And so, Cuomo is ranting. And I think based on what Mike just said, it's probably proper. I mean, right now we're talking about life or death, and he's doing the right thing to say, come on, everybody, let's get this done.
Mike?
No, I was just going to add, I mean, sure, you can yell at people and say, I'm going to punch you in the nose if you don't get these vaccines out or fine you $10,000, whatever.
Right,
$100,000. You have to start providing resources. I mean, this shouldn't be now. It should have been in place. And it's bearing an inadequacy and a poor response by not having a better distribution in place. And it can't be political now. It has to be all for one and one for all. And this bickering with the mayor of New York City, de Blasio, is just not productive. It gets nowhere.
We're seeing it, Rosemary, I was thinking of you because of the Florida governor having is coming under great fire for this exact reason, too. I mean, this is going to be going on throughout the country.
It is. And I think that we're going to see a change when Biden comes in, because right now the burden, as you mentioned, is all on the states. I think there's going to be more help from the federal government very shortly. It is one of the sad and criminal things that Trump is doing, that he's paying more attention to his failed election than he is to just really moving on the distribution of this drug. I think it's really scary now that they're also talking about giving only one shot or half dosages to people to try to spread the inoculation. Fauci has come out and said this is nuts. There's no research on it. It may be totally losing the whole effort. We have to really bear down, and I think this is this is citizens and government have to work together to get this done.
I mean, the other thing, too, about that is that, Jennifer, we're running out of time. So, Jennifer, let me go to you.
Well, I was going to say Biden had been calling this out for a couple of weeks. He was saying he wanted more information exactly how Operation Warp Speed would work and that there would be issues at local levels. And so now what we're seeing is exactly that. So I think when he comes into office, this is going to be one of the major things he or Harris is going to have to focus on, because they're going to have to create some sort of system that really links this federal effort with the local effort and with state involvement in a really organized way that can also be different in different states based on their population distributions in different areas. So what we're seeing is exactly what Biden was afraid of and exactly what he was saying was going to go on. And many of us who had thought about this before with Warp Speed and how it was being touted as this very organized, documented, highly sophisticated plan had questioned it.
because we have a recognition of exactly what's going on now. We're cognizant of how complicated it is in different areas. And in New York, the city itself absolutely needs a better plan to get this out. But when we're talking about this UK variant and it in upstate Saratoga, that really does shift the plan here in the state. And I think whatever comes out from Governor Cuomo and Biden's team, when it comes to New York State, it means that what may have been planned before may not be what will go down because now of this in upstate. It didn't just get birthed here. It got here probably by, in my opinion, someone who traveled in for the holidays.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, this man says he didn't go anywhere.
No.
So there are many more cases. And the question will be when they find a case in the city and how quickly it will spread there.
I'm laughing only because the local news last night and was, you know, this is the guy. This is how old he is. He works at this store. He worked on these days. But we're not identifying him. I mean, you might as well give his address. I don't know.
Right.
I felt bad in that sense. But anyway.
Well, one important thing to remember is that this man is no sicker because of this variant. He's just got the same disease everyone has. It just spreads more quickly. And in one sense, that's good. The vaccine will make that, will also stamp that variant out if we're able to get the vaccine.
You are always I was just trying to, I had thought of saying something on that, Mike, and you reminded me, and thankfully. The two interesting things about this, one is it is no more lethal. This variant seems to be no more lethal than the regular coronavirus variant. And two, it does seem, at least science would suggest so far, that it seems to be addressed by the vaccine. However, it's the contagious aspect and how it spreads, which is far faster than the traditional virus that we have been dealing with thus far.
Which really then means it could spread in quicker in communities that have had a lower percentage of contagion or positive cases,
right,
which then, of course, could lead to an overwhelming in those areas of the hospitals. Mm.
We have 2 minutes, and I'm going to try to get to as many letters because I'm leaving a lot on the table here, so we'll get through as many as I can. Brent says, what about the issues of Trump running for office again with a pending legal case or even a criminal record by this time in 2024? Republicans would be looking for voter reform and allowing felons to retain their voter status. Maybe Trump will run for governor of Georgia. Robin says Hubert Humphrey came close not to attend the proceedings when his VP, he would have declared Nixon the new president. He chose instead to attend the funeral of the first Secretary General of the UN. The absence of the VP is not unprecedented. We go to Roger, who says Trump is vindictive, indifferent to truth, and a national embarrassment, but an effort to prosecute him for supposed crimes would be just as vindictive and would ensure his electoral victory in 2024. Okay.
I think he's done. I think it's over for him. He's lucky he's not in jail.
Mark says nothing happens in the U.S. Senate without the majority leader's approval. Gregory says, is there anything? I don't think we have time for this question. Well, no, we don't have time for that. It's a good question.
It's not true.
Go ahead.
Josh Hawley's effort proves that's not true. McConnell didn't want this attack on the electoral system, and it's happening. So that's not completely true.
All right. We are out of time. My thanks to everybody. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Jennifer Burns. You're all great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be back right after this.